Thanks very much, everybody, for coming here to the graphics room to listen to another talk about building native compiled applications that are going to work everywhere. I had the title of the slide up and realized it didn't actually say Go on the title slide, so just wanted to get that out there right away. It's very exciting to be here in the graphics dev room, to be presenting in the same place that fantastic people over the last decades have shown great new features in KD and GNOME and fantastic discussions around all of that. And hopefully I can bring something new and interesting to the room as well. Just out of interest to get this right, I recognize some faces from the Go dev room yesterday, so maybe a show of hands if people have programmed Go at all. Wow, okay, cool. Probably unusual for this room. And anybody then that is a C developer, just in case I need to go back to some common ground. Right, okay, cool. Well, thanks very much. So just a little bit about myself. Hi, my name is Andrew. It's really nice to meet you all. I am a software engineer, have been for 20 years, I think now. I stopped counting. I work a lot in startups, either my own or other people's companies, solving interesting technical and personal challenges, building teams, all that kind of stuff. And I've written some books, gone on a couple of podcasts on the topic of building applications like the ones I'm going to show you today. I have a background in open source. If you've seen me here before, it might have been talking about the Enlightenment project where I spent a lot of my time, and before then, the Maven project as well. I started the Fine project, which I'm going to present today, to build graphical applications built on top of Go in 2018. And I have been a Go developer since 2 weeks after the project was founded. I'll tell you a little bit more about Fine as we get into it, but I didn't pick up a language I wanted to learn and decide it needed a graphical toolkit. I had an ambition to make getting into graphical application development so much easier. I knew what I wanted to achieve, and then I hunted for a programming language, and I don't know if this is a good or a bad thing to say. I wanted it to be Rust, I so wanted it to, but I couldn't figure it out. And so I picked up Go, and I haven't looked back. I've never felt more productive. My day job is at Fine Labs, which is a company that's set up to help businesses get more out of the types of platform-agnostic technology that I'm going to show. And so we have products and services that could help companies working in this space. So I don't know whether or not people would think that Go is a strange choice of programming language for building graphical applications. It's certainly what the Go development team have said over the past few years, although I think they're coming around now. They've seen how easy it is. But just to summarize the benefits for anybody that doesn't know, much like Dart in the previous presentation, it's going to allow you to write applications that compile natively to absolutely any device. So they can pretty much run anywhere, from desktops through mobiles, WASM on the web browser, through into embedded devices as well. It's important to me also that there are no runtime dependencies. These pieces of software should drag and drop or install through a store in the usual manner without any need for additional steps, no runtime setup, no hidden preconditions required to get the applications running. We may have to do some as a developer, but we take the pain so that our users get the big benefit. We're going to deliver native performance. These applications are compiled down into the same machine code at the TIN level that any piece of software built with C or other built for specific platform technology is going to offer. But fundamentally, I thought it was important to lower the barrier to writing graphical applications, help people to realize it's not so difficult. It's something that you can see and do and have installed on your device very, very quickly indeed. And Go provides the ability to do that whatever platform you're on, but also the standards and the and the tools, the techniques in the language help to make everything easier to understand. It's good documentation, it's standard ways of writing things, unit testing built right in. All of those good things helping to promote good engineering principles. And so for me, this is why it made such a good fit. And it's why the Fine toolkit picked up Go, because we're wanting to be the simplest way possible to get people building beautiful and usable native graphical applications and to not have to think about any changes that might be necessary to get them running on any particular device. So the Fine project, like I said, started in 2018. So that is now 6 years old, I think possibly as of this weekend, actually. Complete coincidence. I was not sitting in a FOSDEM room when I thought up the project, which is a shame, would be a good story. It has become the most popular graphical toolkit for Go, which is pretty exciting. Over the years, there's been actually quite a few have started, and it's nice to have choice. They have started perhaps with different technologies under the hood. Some are using embedded web browsers, for example, and others are interested in enabling more control, more power, where we're focused on the simplicity and the ease of use, I suppose. OSS Insight, if you track them on Twitter, X, wherever they are, have ranked as sixth out of all cross-platform graphical toolkits, which is very exciting. Although for some reason, Qt and GTK don't seem to list in the top 10, so how they came up with the numbers, I don't know. But it puts us up there with others like Flutter, React Native, and other names that you would have heard of. And just last week, I realized that we had got into GitHub's 1,000 most popular repositories across the entirety of their code base, if that's the right word, which I think is something like 350 million repositories. And as part of the Go ecosystem, we make use of the really excellent and welcoming community that they have established over there. And across Slack, Discord, Matrix, and in-person meetings, we've got about 2,000 people that like to get together and talk about building applications, offering help for people who want to get started. So let's get a couple of pictures on these slides as well. This is the Find Demo application. So if you're interested in checking it out, you can load this right now. It's in the standard repository that we have. We ship a few demo applications. And if you're on the Google Play Store, you could download this right now onto your phone and see how it renders on a mobile device. Hint, it looks exactly the same, except it's adjusted for the different screen sizes. And of course, I mean, as a developer at heart, light mode is no good to me. We ship the dark mode by default as well. Sorry, they're both in there by default. It will pick the right variant of the theme depending on your user preferences. So let's get started and build an app. I'm not going to overwhelm you with complex code, which is perhaps a relief to people who don't know Go or C, but I'll step through what we do have. Go is known for being easy to compile across all different platforms from whatever developer device you have, which is fantastic. It's a good place to start. But because we're going to be doing some graphics programming and we want optimized binaries that are going to use your hardware acceleration, we've got to get a little bit of C in there under the hood. You're never going to see it. But we do need a compiler installed as well. So you'll need to install Go and GCC or Clang or a compatible compiler. If you're unsure whether you've succeeded setting up a development environment, we have a Find Setup tool which will verify the runtime. The runtime. It's linked from the Getting Started pages, which I'll reference later. And that's just going to check that the Go compiler, the C compiler are found and catch typical challenges around just having your path set up properly so that tools are discoverable. And we have a tool called Fine that's going to be useful for our packaging later. So there are a couple of steps that we need to do to get started with a project. Nothing like if we were going to be starting with a C code base, but nonetheless, it's something to be aware of. We need to make a directory for our code. We need to initialize the Go module. This is a step that was introduced recently. It adds for much more powerful dependency management on the Go project. It used to be that you could just open a file, save it, run it, and you would have an application displayed. And I'm trying to coax the Go team to allow that as a default for really early stage, because the mantra is start with the smallest thing possible and then add to it over time. So apologies, we've got a couple of steps there that you need to know. We're calling GoGet, which is going to grab the library. Goes looking all of the stuff up on the web through pretty efficient caching mechanisms. But as you can see, that's a URL. It's finding the source code. And that's going to download it into the module that you've just created. Actually, it's referencing in the module and putting in a common space, so you don't need to download it again for another project. And then we're going to edit our Go file. I'm calling it UI.go because I'm really good at naming. This is the code that we're going to put in it. Not adventurous to live code, I'm afraid, but I'll step you through it. We have package main because every application enters through the main package. We're importing two packages They are in the same namespace of find.io/find/v2, because this is our second major API. And it's the app and the widget sub-packages that we're going to be using. The app package sets up the runtime, pulls in the appropriate drivers for the device that you're running on, and then is going to bootstrap the application. And the widget package we're using to add something into our window. Our main function, again, probably no prizes here for guessing that's the entry point for a Go app, is creating a new Fine application. That's invoking the driver. It's creating a new window from the application with hello as its title. So if your device has title bars, hello gets popped in there. And then the one line, which is basically our entire user interface, says set the content of the window to a new widget, a new label widget that says hello fine. And then we then call show and run on the window, which is a little shortcut for show my window, run my application. If you're not familiar, part of the challenge with graphical apps is they do have to run in an event thread. The operating system has specific requirements for things. We just bundle it up as simply as possible. So there we have, I think, four lines of code and a couple of import statements. We can type go run, full stop, the period there is just say the current directory. You could equally have said main.go because we only have one file. And it's going to load this picture, this window here, says hello, fine. I was running this on a desktop in dark mode at the time, which is why it looks that way. Wow, yeah, I can see you're really, really excited about a Hello World application. I mean, I was the first time it appeared on the screen, but that was a few years ago. So let's do something a little bit more interesting and show that it's still going to be easy to do something that's useful. I'm going to make a markdown editor for you. We have built into the standard widget package an entry widget that seems to say editor. It's an entry widget that's going to take the user input. We're going to use a rich text in our application to render the output. Part of the reason this is going to be really straightforward is that our rich text understands Markdown as a source for the information to mark up a text document. And a horizontal split container for laying out our user interface. I showed you widgets before, but containers are sort of like a type of widget where you have multiple things in it, and it has a layout that's going to describe how things should lay out on screen. You don't position widgets manually. You have an area, and a container fills it, which means that we can adapt to screen sizes, orientations very easily. Widgets don't have to think too much about how they're placed, what type of device they're running on. It's actually very powerful when you're not really wanting to think too much about what system you're going to be running your application on. And I'm going to hook the two together with an unchanged callback so that when the user edits their text, the runtime will change it. Okay, so I described four lines. It is a little bit more than four lines of code, but we have the same imports with the addition of the container package, and we're starting the application and window in the same way. Although, as you can see, a very exciting new title is going to appear on our window. The editor field, can't seem to point, sorry. Anyway, you can read, it's not a lot of text. Is a new multi-line entry, which is a standard entry widget, but has more than one line in it. We don't need to specify how many, because it will fill the space available. We have a new rich text. We're saying load markdown, but we're loading nothing. As you can imagine, if you passed in a string, a markdown string there, it would actually render that as it was loading for the first time. And then the hook that I mentioned is, again, one line of code. The unchanged on entry passes a string to whoever is interested in what changed, and the parse markdown function of our preview accepts a string because you would parse your markdown from a string. So we're able to set one function to the other one. So when unchanged happens, it fires parse markdown. So we can avoid signal slots, string-based IDs, and comparisons to connect multiple widgets together and just use a single line of code instead. And then the most complicated piece of code in this entire snippet is the container. We're using an adaptive grid, which is like a grid, but it adapts. 2 is the number of columns/rows that it should have. if you had a standard widget, a standard grid, it would have columns or rows specified, and as it reaches the end, it flows onto another. With an adaptive grid, it's going to decide whether it's columns or rows based on the space available. So if we were loading this on our phone in portrait mode, one will be above the other, and if it's in landscape, one will be to the left and one will be to the right. So, sorry about the sneak preview before, but this is a Markdown editor. There we go, that's better, thank you, thank you. You're too kind. As you can see, this is not difficult. We have the entry widget on the left. We've typed some Markdown into it, and it has rendered on the right. There is a link which you could tap, and it has referenced a local image as well. That's quite cool, but this is cooler. It's exactly the same software that has been packaged as an IPA and dropped into my iPhone simulator. Actually, it's a .app because it's a simulator, not a real device, but exactly the same code could be dropped onto a device as well. As you can see, it's also running in landscape, so the arrangement is the same. So there, that is the application running across multiple different platforms. How did we get it there? So compiling for targets that aren't your current machine is a little bit more complicated. But let's start with what if you are compiling locally. The find tool, the helper that I mentioned before, is pretty important and very helpful, as many helpers are. You can get it from the URL there, and that go-get command is going to download it and put it into your path. And then you can use it to do helpful things like package the application or install it locally. As I'm sure you're aware, a binary that you get out of a compiler is fantastic and efficient, and you can move it around because it is portable, but it doesn't look good, and you can't put it in your start menu. So find package is going to give you a binary with whatever metadata around it is necessary. So it will inject an icon into an .exe for Windows, or it will put the icon and desktop file into the appropriate places on your Linux system. And find install on that second line there is doing all of that for the current system and installing it into the right place for you. So user local, probably for most people here, or the start menu or your applications folder on Mac. Line three there is how do we do it for a different platform? Because we can't just invoke the compiler, we also want to package it differently. The .exe is going to appear instead of whatever our native system is. That is going to use local tools. And so if you're familiar with cross-compiling in C, having a toolchain specifying the CC variable is going to be likely needed for some of these cross ports. But we'll come back to that in a second. The fourth one there is to build an Android application on our platform. To do that, you just need the Android SDK installed. That's actually quite straightforward and relatively portable. The only reason it's a bit more complex is we need to say what the application ID is, because the sandboxing and the operating system's rules say you can't just be an anonymous piece of software. So we pass that in. There is also a metadata file that you can do if you prefer to avoid command line arguments all the time, fineapp.toml. I'm not going to cover it, but it's there and can help you save a little bit of pain. But what if you don't want to manage multiple developer toolchains installing packages, even if it's for your local environment? You just might not want to, you might not be able to. So contributed to the project is Finecross from Luca Corbo and Cedric Bai, who many of you will know, and another guy, Jacob, on our project have pulled together a Docker-based build system with a very standard command line front end. So you could, much like you would say find package OS Windows, you could say find cross Windows, and it's going to take your application, bundle it up inside the Docker container, put the binary back into your current directory, and exit the container. So helps you to avoid all of the setup. If you don't mind running Docker or Podman on your local instance, that's going to be super, super helpful. Very briefly, want to touch on some more interesting parts of the toolkit, because it's not all about just showing showing graphical elements on screen. One of the hard things about making applications portable is the file system. We take it for granted, but we shouldn't. It's not always there. So we've provided dialogues to open and save files, and a package that helps you to manage storage in an abstract way, even more abstract actually than the recently added Go file system package. It doesn't assume file paths. It uses URIs to uniquely identify any data source. So you could have your data remotely on a network. Somebody made an application to browse their Steam library. They connected it through the storage API, and they used the file open dialog to browse their Steam library. Cool. But why it's really cool is the picture on the right here. I've asked my application to open a file. I put that onto my iPhone simulator. Yes. And it has shown me this file picking dialog. I don't know if people are familiar or not, but this is what's going to come up if you have an iPhone set up with an iCloud account. I can pick data off the cloud, or I can back out and I can go to the Dropbox picker where I might have something stored. So third-party applications can provide data as though they were files, because we're not making the assumption that they're files. And if you get further into this and you want to separate your UI from the data that you're managing internally, separate state from rendering, then we have a binding package. So you could pass around a string binding, not have to remember that it's going to a label. Or you could multiplex. I have some data, it's going to go to two or three widgets. And most of the standard widgets will provide a with data constructor, so I can pass a data binding in. And that's a two-way data binding. Everything's always going to be kept up to date. So two pretty helpful things. But I wish I had more time to tell you more. Obviously, there's a full widget library, or I wouldn't be shouting about, hey, everybody, you should try this. We have a dialogues library and full-featured forms as well, which surprisingly is one of the things that could be a little tricky to get working on a mobile app. Menus, some more complex containers than I have shown you. We have notification integration, system tray for desktop, and popping in and out wherever it happens to be appropriate for the device you're on. And we've provided native access to APIs that you might not have in Go. So if you need to use a library, it's not available in Go, you can call out to that natively through a C API. The Go team have done a fantastic job with making that integration really easy. You just essentially import C and call it with a C namespace, and it works pretty much transparently. Again, there's some complications. If this is Android and you want to access the NDK, you need the JVM instance. So we've provided some native integration that give you the context necessary. I'm not going to step through that today. However, there is a little bit more than that. It wouldn't be a presentation in the graphics dev room if I wasn't able to say, but hold on a second. We built an entire desktop system using this API stack. The presentation that I've just run through is in an app called Slides. It is a Markdown file. We support Markdown rendering. That is pulled together in a Fine app. The terminal here, another Fine app. In fact, the desktop system, everything in front of us, it's all rendered in Fine. It is Go APIs and very, very easy to understand. So there you go. I feel like I've fulfilled what's necessary to consider ourselves a serious graphical contender. If you would like to learn more, well, I'm here. I'll hang around outside if anybody wants to chat. There's a lot of documentation online. Like I said, the project's been going for a while, so you can find a lot of what we have at docs.find.io. There's also a pretty good video channel at Fine.io on YouTube where you can find tutorials, examples, and do search for Fine tutorials outside of what we have, because there's translations in... Okay, I'm not going to list them in case any of them politically insensitive, but plenty of different languages for folk who find that they want to try a platform that's different to the standard ones available, perhaps. There's a book available about Fine that I wrote. You don't have to buy it, but it's out there. If you would like to contribute, and we would really love it if some people came along and helped us to improve this project, everything is on GitHub, including the documentation, the websites, the examples. You can all find it in the organization. The main repository is simply called Fine, and you can find the source code to everything I've shown you today. We're, of course, looking for sponsors, but who isn't? If you love it, you know, help out in whatever way you can. I appreciate your time. Thank you so much, and I'll take any questions that you have. Excuse me, please, yes. We do a lot of complicated stuff to make... Oh, I'm sorry, of course. So what's the support like for iOS? Is it more complicated than Android? It is very complicated for us. It is trivial for you, the developer, who's using the toolkit. You don't need to think about it. You don't need to do anything at all. The tools that I've shown you will create any type of application from your code. The one proviso is that if you want to put it into an onto an iOS device, Apple is going to insist that you own some hardware that they have produced. It may or may not be possible to do it in other ways, but that's the license. But no, fundamentally, this is platform agnostic. The APIs are all guaranteed to work absolutely everywhere. Sorry, the fuzzed empty shirt, yeah.
I was just wondering if you could provide a sense of, are there any certain kinds of application that are both a particularly good fit and maybe less good fit for fitting in this framework?
Yeah, so are there applications that are good fit or not a good fit for using Fine? I think the easiest answer is going to be that if you have a document-rich piece of content, if you're helping people to browse archives of documents and things like that, you'd probably be better with a web framework, honestly, because, I mean, that's what it's built for. If it's more interactive, if it's graphical-driven, then that's something that we're going to be much better placed to do. Fundamentally, if you want to get this out to many people, we're going to alleviate a lot of the pain of getting it out there quickly, and some of the things that other toolkits might offer as built-in or community add-ons might take a little bit of time to implement, but you've saved a lot of time up front. I wouldn't go and implement games because we don't offer the 3D acceleration as part of our API. We just use it internally for the speed improvements. But it has been used for such a wide variety of things. We have remote desktop applications streaming 60 frames a second, full screen. So that kind of thing, that's pretty cool. And can we squeeze one more in? Yeah, just there, please.
Yesterday you mentioned about using OpenGL as the backend. Under iOS, for instance, are you going straight to Metal, or are you using, say, Angle or some other solution?
Okay, so yeah, what are the graphical backends that we're utilizing? It is OpenGL on the desktop, you're quite right, and we are using GLES on the mobile platforms, iOS and Android. I'm aware that some of these have been deprecated and they may change over time. On the desktop, Mac is trying to kill off OpenGL. They've not really said that they're going to kill GLES on mobile, but it's inevitable that they will want to. We're looking in the future to build more more platform-specific engines because, you know, performance also offers slightly better portability, ironically, if you build for everything separately. Internally, but we've designed the API, so we don't need to make those decisions. It's really easy to use, it's going to work, and over time, we're going to adapt the backends to be more efficient or whatever is needed by the platforms. And so we're offering, we do updates every 6 months, 4 to 6 months, so that we can keep up with the specifics of each of those platforms. So if we have to look at a different one, it'll be there before you have to worry about it. Thank you so much, everybody. Enjoy the rest of your day.